Unity is strength and assured success. All for one and one for all. Unity means solidarity. Yeah. United we stand. Divided we fall. Unity, please don't desert me. You're the sweetest money.
Oh, yeah. Unity. Ooh. Another week. Another day, another dollar, another draconian piece of legislation passed. And now in New Zealand, we have the fabulous opportunity to be bought out by the Murdoch Corporation, otherwise known as News Corp. And it's certainly going to make a corpse out of any kind of free speech that radio, the poor amount of free speech that TVNZ and Radio 1 have been putting out in this country anyway. But conveniently, the government's now passed legislation so that it's no longer going to be required in any way, shape or form to produce local content. Although I'm sure they probably still will, just as long as it's completely mindless, boring and absolutely ridiculously distracting for anybody who wants anything to be done in this country. People like myself. Conveniently, though, this means that although there is no real alternative media in this country, with the exception of myself, it means that all those people out there who are really upset that now they don't have their own state-owned broadcaster to to pop propaganda at them like it's no frickin' tomorrow, they may invest in guerrilla media. Who knows? My very special guest today, our Kiwi collaborator, starting off the week, is an associate of Mary Byrne. Those of you who listen to the show frequently may have remembered her from last year. We were talking about the Fluoride Action Network based in Wellington. And his name is Mark Atkin, to my knowledge. Mark, welcome to the show.
Morning, Benny. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, now, give us a preface yourself and introduce yourself to the audience and all of that kind of stuff, and then we'll get into it.
Sure. My name is Mark Atkin. I have a bachelor's degree in science and an honours degree in law. I completed my final law thesis on decision-making on fluoridation in New Zealand. I've been involved with fluoridation since the 1970s and intensively since 1999 when I helped Mary keep fluoride out of Petone. In 2003, with Mary, I was one of the founding members of Fluoride Action Network New Zealand. And now I've just formed a new information service in response to moves by the Ministry of Health to create a fake information service, which is really a lobby service. That's where I'm, where we're at the moment.
Okay, okay. Now, what was it that motivated you as a scientific professional to lend yourself to the fluoride debate? Because with people such as Paul Connett and others, they tried to avoid it for as long as possible because they didn't want to get demonized. What made you such a sucker for punishment?
Well, when I was in my late teens in the 70s, I was into studying the alternative view of basically everything, whether it was fluoridation, medicine, technologies, whatever. So it was just part
of it. Must have been an unpopular kid.
Yeah, well, no, not really.
Mustn't have been
hard to do in those days.
I'm sure we could all relate to that, because the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yep.
And now, as far... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
But I was going to say that there was an interesting thing that came up with the conversation with Mary, that there's actually a fluoride-free fountain down there in Wellington, and people turn up from miles around carrying their water bottles to fill it up at this one fountain that doesn't have fluoride. Is that true?
That's true. In fact, on a fine day, you're having to queue up and wait to fill up your bottles, and during summer, it's basically a queue there from dawn till dusk and even after the dusk, because that many people use it. Upper Hutt, well, apparently looking at doing the same thing, and in Kapiti, they've got three designated public taps for people who want to avoid fluoridation right up there as well.
Wow. Yeah, see, I was gonna say that when it comes down to it, because I haven't been able to get my good, fabulous pH-10 water delivered, so I've been having to drink the tap water for the last week and a half. And It tastes kind of like pool water, to tell you the truth. Pool water mixed with scummy mosquito larvae infested tank water. That's kind of like the combo. That's what the flavor palette reveals to me. And my deep concern is that although the fact that we've got copious amounts of poisons and toxins and dangerous stuff in our water supply anyway because of all the pesticides that get used in, and we don't have any regulatory authorities to keep that kind of stuff out of our drinking water standards and all of that kind of jazz, it's the poisons that are deliberately put in there that really kind of F me off to a certain extent, like chlorine, for example. It makes perfectly good mustard gas if you happen to be fighting in World War One, but you don't use it to clean your water and then drink it. You use ozone, because ozone kills everything in that water that would be dangerous to you and doesn't wind up killing the person later on who winds up drinking it by festering up in all of their bones.
Yep, that'd be true. But, of course, these people who try to make the world a worse place... they do this with everything. I mean, you could replace fluoridation with 1080 or aspartame or mercury fillings, dioxin, any of those, and you see exactly the same story, the same methods deployed to silence people who speak out, try to rubbish them, trying to keep stuff out of the media, unlike shows like yours, just to try and keep everything quiet and deny. You could replace the word fluoridation with any of those things and you have exactly the same story.
I suppose that when it comes down to it, the government has been set up specifically with the intention of enslaving the people rather than serving them. And so, as a result, anybody who goes in for parliamentary inductory process swears to the Queen and all her successors. They don't swear to the law. They don't swear to the people. They don't swear to anything other than some hereditary dictatorial monarch who maintains power over the entire country, and indeed SIS keeps tabs on all of our parliamentarians as well, as Keith Locke and Nandor Tantros of the Green Party found out. So, you know, what's the point? Old, what's his name, Hone Harawira, went in there and tried to, swear upon the Treaty of Waitangi, and he was kicked out, founding document of this country. Man's kicked out of Parliament for doing that during his induction ceremony. What does that tell you about this country? Now, I'm not a supporter of Hone Harawira, far from it. If anything, he's the only politician that I've tried to interview that I wanted to give some support to who just, you know, walked away. And I don't know. I presume it's because he's racist. But I suppose local councils are the thing that really, really should be the ones cutting the mustard here when it comes to fluoride in the water supply, and as I understand it, that's how the Fluoride Action Network is really playing it in this country, because it's by council approval that fluoride gets dumped in the water supply, isn't it?
That's correct. In fact, over the last 2 years, we put in extensive submissions, like 50-page submissions to councils around the country. This year, we've had about half a dozen or more take up the cause to at least review fluoridation policy. What we found consistently is that whereas we might convince councillors, and there are more and more prepared to listen to the facts now, whilst there are still councillors who are just point blank, will not listen to anything, ignorant and arrogant. But whilst we can get councillors now to say we need to look at this, what typically happens is they get council officers to prepare a report. And as soon as it hits council officers, you find senior management, or sometimes CEOs often... in the councils, making sure that those reports are completely and absolutely biased in favour of fluoridation. In fact, in 2007 in Lower Hutt here, when we did persuade the council to put up the infant formula warning, that is, don't use fluoridated water for making up infant formula, as issued by the Americans, we found that there were, behind the scenes, there were council officers corresponding with Stephen Palmer and Robin Wyman of the Ministry of Health, who in fact ghostwrote part of that report. And when a completely biased report was put before the councillors, one councillor said, well, why is this biased? And Mr. Sherlock, who orchestrated all this, said, well, the Ministry of Health are experts, so it's perfectly acceptable for us to give you a completely biased report. In spite of that, the councillors...
Well, no Shiite, Sherlock. Continue.
Yeah, so anyway, the councillors did agree to put up the warning. Then they got Stephen Palmer to ghostwrite a propaganda piece for fluoridation, which they were going to put up, and the communications manager said, no, that's not acceptable. But basically he said he was under extreme pressure from pro-fluoride council officers and managers to not do what the councillors had instructed. And we find that repeatedly. Council in the far north, under the OIA, we found council officers, corresponding with the district health board up there trying to help them to promote their illegal two-year medical experiment they conducted on the people of Kaitaia and Kaikohe. Council officers working behind the scenes to work with the DHB against their oath of office.
Right. So it's basically just open corruption. And even when they're called on it, they don't get unelected, they don't get arrested, they don't even get any kind of discipline, do they?
Correct. In fact, the then CEO of the Far North District Council, who signed a 10-year commitment, fortunately with an out clause, to fluoridate, even though the trial was agreed for only 2 years, he signed that. It was countersigned by another council officer with whom he was having an affair at the time. He left with a $250,000 golden handshake for his trouble.
Oh, what? Well, isn't that nice? Where did all that frickin' money come from?
Yeah, from ratepayers, mate. Ratepayers of Kaitaia and Kaikohe.
What, did you... Hold on, did you just say ratepayers? Because that's a great Freudian slip there.
I said ratepayers.
That's basically what it is.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, you know, that's essentially what it is. Council officers are more or less just a monetary brothel. You go in, you get effed, and then you get, and then you leave, you know, you've spent your juices, and you walk away with nothing but smiles. Oh man, I feel so great participating in the local.
It's about $250 a time. It's about the going rate, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised that they don't rent out the council chambers at an hourly rate.
Yeah.
I mean, genuinely surprised here. I'm sorry. I'm kind of getting off topic here. It's kind of difficult to not when you talk about local councils, because let's face facts here. When it comes to keeping control over a society, it's usually this one step, two step, three step kind of program. And if the councils weren't doing what the central government wanted them to do, or if the central government wasn't wanting what the central bankers want them to do, they wind up having some representative come down or some huge amount of money turn up to get their agenda through. And it happens almost every single time. But there are occasions, of course, where we have successes. And on that note, have there actually been any real successes in New Zealand? Have there been councils that have specifically removed all of the fluoridation from their water?
Over the years, yeah. Christchurch removed it from Waimari years and years ago. Waimari actually had more tooth decay than the rest of unfluoridated Christchurch. Tauranga got rid of it quite a while back. Ashburton got rid of it thanks to the efforts of mainly of Don Church, who's also on Fans Committee, back in 2002. And then they kept it out again when the DHB had another go back in 2006 or 8. Let me think who else took it out. A couple of others around have taken out. Kapiti would have taken out last year.
Now these are small councils, with the exception of Christchurch, of course. But Christchurch didn't defluoridate the entire city, did they? Did they just defluoridate a suburb? Because I know that in I think it's Onehunga here in Auckland, where we've just recently had a massive gas explosion, coincidentally, they've managed to remove the fluoride from their water, and they too have a central fountain, like they do in Wellington, where people come in and fill their water bottles up. Sorry, go ahead.
Waimari was the only part of Christchurch that ever was fluoridated, because Christchurch has lots of wars all around the city. And Onehunga, they tried to fluoridate it back in 2001, and it was kept out through a campaign. And interestingly, the DHB's own survey then showed that the more people knew about fluoridation, the more they were likely to vote against it. And the less they knew, the more they were likely to vote for it. That was the DHB's own survey.
Yeah, well, is that surprising at all? I don't think so.
No.
You know, it's just like, well, basically, the only reason why you'd be for fluoride is if you're a moron.
Yep, that'd be true. Like, Mercury fillings, everything else that rots your brain. Yeah.
See, well, you know, if you're for anything in our current society, more or less, you're a moron. Because everything's freaking toxic. And the only way that anybody would be for it is if they knew nothing about it, which most people do.
Yeah.
Okay. I suppose that that's the really eternally frustrating process about it here, is that, I don't know, perhaps we're getting arrogant here by saying we're the smart ones and you're the dumb ones because you don't know anything. But and the problem is it's actually literally true. And because they're so arrogant, they think we are the ones who are arrogant because they don't know anything.
Yeah, it's like the psychologists that say, oh, it's only intelligent people that believe in conspiracy theories. Oh, right, so intelligent people acknowledge conspiracy and less intelligent people don't. So they're saying we should believe the less intelligent people. That's really clever, yeah.
Yeah, well, they are the most clever people. After all, they've managed to rig up a diagnostic statistical manual with 700-plus mental disorders, including which believing 9/11 was an inside job, or believing that the Federal Reserve Bank is private, as it's listed in the frickin' phone book. And no, seriously. In the continental United States, you can be institutionalized for thinking that the Federal Reserve is a private bank. Now, it's not so much ignorance here. I think it's just straight up insanity. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, speaking of which, my very special guest from the Fluoride Action Network, New Zealand, is Mark Atkin. And we'll be right back after the break.
Well, there's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and, incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, broadcasting live from the future from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, in the slave-chained South Pacific Island nation. And my very special guest today is Mark Atkins from the Fluoride Action Network New Zealand, and we couldn't apparently hear him, or the listeners apparently couldn't hear him speaking during the last segment, so we're actually probably going to have to ask you to introduce yourself again, mate.
Okay, thanks, Vinny. So I'm Mark Atkins. I have a bachelor's degree in science and an honours degree in law. I completed my final law thesis on decision-making on fluoridation in New Zealand. I've been involved with fluoridation since the 1970s, intensively since 1999 when I helped Mary Byrne keep fluoridation out of Petone. And in 2003, along with Mary, I was one of the founding members of Fluoride Action Network New Zealand. And I've also just formed a new organisation called the New Zealand Fluoridation Information Service as a counter to moves by the Ministry of Health to create a fake information service.
Okay. So, in terms of having a fake information service, I'm not sure. I was confused. Are you talking about the government there or PR or are PR people? What?
Yeah. So, basically, just to get a little bit of history of how this happened, last year we almost got fluoridation out of Kapiti, Parapram, Waikanae, just north of Wellington. And in fact, we would have got it out, except the CEO had told one of the anti-fluoridation councillors the wrong date for the meeting, so she was away on a business trip. And the boat was drawn 5 each, and so fluoridation stayed. And but for that incorrect information, we would have got it out of Kapiti. Now, this scared the hell out of the Ministry of Health. And as a result of that, the local medical officer of health, Stephen Palmer, had the bright idea to create a special lobby group And so the Ministry of Health put out a tender document late last year on the government tender site, hoping to get an organisation to do this for them. What, in fact, they ended up with was a consortium of about five organisations. Four of them are funded by the Ministry, and the fifth is Environmental and Scientific Research, which has $10 million a year contracts with the Ministry of Health and has a long history of promoting fluoridation through so-called scientific research, but was actually like cigarette science, basically. So they created this this lobby group, and that was their role. And originally it was going to be called the National Water Fluoridation Support and Coordination Service. However, they decided to change the name and called it the National Fluoridation Information Service. But in fact, if you look at it, its objectives, it's to help all organisations that are promoting fluoridation around New Zealand, whether they be district health boards or the New Zealand Dental Association or people like Plunkett. It's to work with them to help them promote fluoridation, and they're not allowed to make any statement that would be against fluoridation policy. And yet they're purporting to be an objective, independent information service to provide information to councils and decision makers to make the right decision on fluoridation, which of course is what the ministry wants, which is to poison everybody. So that's what they're.
That seems precisely the same as common business practice. You know, if you're working at McDonald's, you can never say anything bad against McDonald's, even though everybody knows it is bad.
Yep.
So they're not. Are they a private company by chance?
No. It's actually, at this stage, it's a virtual organisation. It's actually coordinated under the Hutt Valley District Health Board, who previously had 6 years of contracts to do something similar and never really got anywhere. And the organisations are like the National Poison Centre, which is a ministry-funded organisation, the Regional Public Health under the Hutt Valley District Health Board, which is part of this DHB. So I don't know what they're actually classified as. There's a group out of Massey University on public health, which is funded by the Ministry of Health, the special unit in Massey University. So the organisation itself is a consortium, a virtual organisation, and is a consortium of those other organisations.
Okay. So basically, it's a big corrupt roundtable group that just basically sits there, lies to everybody, poisons them, and gets paid for it. That sounds like a government organisation to me.
Yeah, it sounds like one to me too. Well, of course, you've got other ones like Business Roundtable.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is the difficulty. When people say government and when people say business, I don't hear a difference.
No,
that'd
just
the
be
business,
the Queen and Right of New Zealand,
do you mean? Well, the Majesty and Queen and Shaft in New Zealand, more like it. You know, this is what really gets to me, man, is that we have so many of these organisations, and for some reason people respect all these organisations and all these organisation heads when there's no evidence to suggest that they can be trusted, no evidence to suggest that they have no bias, and no evidence to suggest that it's cost-effective what they're doing either. And, of course, the only way they can do this is without the consent of the public. Now, I don't know about you, but have any council, have any councils kind of like brought up meetings and discussed these types of advisory panels and things of that nature in a clear, open and honest and integral way, and then just suddenly realise, hey, we've been paying a whole bunch of people to shovel us frickin' BS for like 20, 30, 40 years. Why don't we just kick these bastards out? Has that ever happened? I don't think so.
So you're talking with the fluoridation issue. What we see, which I mentioned earlier, which people apparently couldn't hear, was that, as an example, when we did get the Hutt City Council to look seriously at the warning not to use fluoridated water for making up infant formula because it overdoses them and poisons them, that the council has agreed that they would actually do that. They put up that warning, at least on the website, and in other ways. And in the background, council officers and certain council managers worked to make sure that the report that was prepared for them was completely biased. And in fact, part of it was ghostwritten by members of the District Health Board and the Ministry of Health. And it was presented as a completely biased report, and when challenged on it, Mr. Sherlock, who's one of the managers at the time responsible for the bias report, said, well, the Ministry are the experts, so it's perfectly acceptable for us to give you a completely biased report. So stop complaining, basically. So, yeah, we get counsellors to maybe look at it, but you get behind-the-scenes council officers have their own agenda, or the managers have their own agenda, or sometimes the CEOs actually orchestrate it directly.
CEOs? Our councils have CEOs, as in corporate executive officers?
Yep.
Okay, so let me get this straight. How are councils supposed to be run? Are they supposed to be run like a corporation, or are they supposed to be run like a council? Which do you think?
Well, you would think that they're supposed to be run like a council, where the council office, councilors who we elect to represent us say what they want, and that gets done. But actually,
sir,
that isn't what happens.
Sir, you're a terrorist.
Yep.
All right.
Call you a terrorist.
We don't want that kind of separatist talk going along here. It's sedition. You know, trying to get a council to act like a council. What do you think, we live in a free country? Oh, the tyranny. I don't know.
Yeah, I might have thought that when I was 8 years.
Yeah. Is that how long it took you to shirk off the naivete that the government's a good, loving organisation, and they do things honestly and in a proper way and have facts and evidence to back up their stuff, and they don't waste anybody's money? How long did it take you in your life to figure out that just wasn't the case? It took me like 21 years.
Yeah, well,
faith in the entire system.
Yeah, throughout my teens, I mean, I looked at alternative everything, because that's just my nature, to look at the alternative view of everything, not the mainstream view, but to realise that it wasn't just stupidity, but organised an organised agenda, if you like to call it that. Being involved in fluoridation very quickly brings you to that realisation, like being involved with any other cause, whether it's 1080 or mercury fillings or any of that stuff. You see exactly the same pattern in the agenda, and you realise there's a whole orchestrated litany of lies going on behind the scenes there.
Well, let's think about that for a moment. I mean, how do you eliminate that as a factor? With my opinion, the big problem that I saw was that the media is supposed to be the fourth estate, you know,
yep.
Keep watch over all of these people, make sure they don't get up into too much scumbaggery, and expose them if they do. Has that been happening lately? Because it seems more and more that occasionally there'll be a good story in the media, you know, like the Alan Smith swine flu story, or occasionally there'll be a good cannabis documentary or something made by mainstream. But it's all watered down at the end of the day and doesn't push the envelope. And that's best case scenario. In terms of just everyday type things, there is no real alternative media out there to expose what's happening with these types of people, or at least not to any great extent. In this country, there's no real broadcasting things going on, and it kind of shatters your faith, and it lends itself to, in my opinion, individuals basically having to take control of their own situation and make that stuff happen. Is that basically how you and the rest of the fans people operate, just sort of like a independently operated and self-motivated?
Yeah, absolutely, and self-funded. Yeah, to give you a couple of examples, actually, a couple of years back, we had persuaded Channel 9 to view Christopher Bryson's interview on the fluoride deception, a very interesting and revealing book he wrote on the corruption of how fluoridation started in the first place. And they were going to air that. One of the Dunedin City Councillors rang up his mate, who was the owner of Channel 9 and Otago Daily Times, and he put the premiere, so the public never got to see it. Up in Hamilton, back a few years ago, the Waikato Daily Times was so blatantly biased pro-fluoride in their articles they wrote that a local free weekly newspaper, I think it was, said straight out, we will only publish anti-fluoridation information to try and at least redress partly the balance of this bias we're seeing from the Waikato Times. So, we have ongoing problems with the mainstream media either distorting what's going on, completely suppressing what's going on. The Herald won't print anything that's anti-fluoride. You just don't get it in there, period.
Have they specifically said that they won't print anything that's anti-fluoride, or is that just the general theme that you've deduced? Because in a lot of cases, these people are so frickin' dumb that they actually admit what they really do.
Yeah, but I can't remember, to be honest. There may have been some half-pie statement that they wouldn't way back. It would have been years ago now. I couldn't remember, but certainly that is quite clearly their policy.
Well, it'll be a great thing to dig up that thing from the past and then pop it in a new documentary, don't you think?
Yeah.
You know, because let's face it this way, right, is that the past always catches up with you, whether you like it or not. And if anybody's been avoiding the past catching up with them, it's local government, you know. And frankly, I feel to a large extent, like the health of the entire country has deteriorated to such a point where if we build one more hospital, it's all over. You know, we're already siphoning off copious quantities of money into this death promotion, healthcare centres, and we're pumping them full of dangerous drugs. And part of the reason why they get so sick and have to get drugs pumped up full of them is because all the frickin' water's poisoned. All the frickin' food is poisoned. Literally everything. You know, you walk out your door, and all of a sudden, boom, you've been hit with electromagnetic radiation fields from the power lines. At the very least, it happens. Or if you're driving one of those electric cars or something, the engines in that put off enough frickin' radiation to sterilize you practically. You know, all of our clothes are made out of poisonous materials. The water's got umpteen chemicals in it. And in fact, now we're detecting uranium in our water supplies in low levels because the fluoride's being taken from a phosphate fertilizer industry where there's a whole lot of radioactive material there in the mining process. And it's a frickin' waste product. A waste product that you can't put into the environment in any way, shape, or form. Otherwise, you get huge fines. Unless, of course, you sell it to somebody, and then it no longer becomes classified as toxic waste, and then try and recycle it through human kidneys.
Yep, of course, you could do what Mr. Coleman did the other day on radio and said, oh, well, everything's a poison, so what's the problem? Why do we have it?
Are you effing kidding me?
No,
Dr. Coleman said that?
Well, hey, we heard it from Jeanette Fitzsimons when she was co-leader of the Greens as well. Same thing. Everything's a poison. Even water's a poison enough. So why are you worried about fluoride? Well, why do we have an international hazardous goods poison bloody scale? And why are silico fluorides acutely toxic? One tablespoon is lethal. You know, whereas salt, of course, is non-toxic, as is the natural calcium fluoride. It's the same toxicity as salt. So according to people like Mr. Coleman, well, if everything's non-toxic, well, why don't we just dump it all in the water? Why don't we do what Chriso Chemicals did for 30 years and dump mercury in the water like they did in Minamata Bay? If everything's non-toxic, that's not a problem. That's what he's saying, basically.
Yeah. Well, you know, I actually agree with Dr. Coleman there. There's no such thing as a dangerous toxin. I mean, a spoonful of cyanide in the morning sprinkled on my Weet-Bix is what Kiwi kids do best, you know? I mean, after all, we do really need a lot more mining contracting and more fracking around our particular country at the moment because we're not extracting enough resources for the aid of international bankers who have seemed to have imploded the entire world's economy through economic weapons of mass destruction! You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Mark Atkin from the New Zealand Fluoride Action Network. And we'll be right back at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
There must be some kind of way out of here.
Send the fluoride to the council member. Oh, the toxicity. Isn't it lovely? My very special guest today is from the Fluoride Action Network. His name is Mark Atkin. Welcome back from break, Mark.
Thanks, Vinny.
Final segment here with you. Would you like to divulge, what are some of the most interesting little factoids about fluoride that you think every brainwashed slave out there should know?
I think One of the key things about fluoride is that it does get into tooth enamel if you have it on your surface of your teeth, like toothpaste, but it does not get into your teeth by swallowing it, and fluoridated water is too weak to have any surface benefit. So there's no point in having fluoridation at all. You might get some benefit from fluoride toothpaste. The stuff that they use is toxic industrial waste. It's classified as acutely toxic. It is contaminated with a whole raft of heavy metals and radioactive metals, as you've mentioned before. So we're not just adding fluoride to the water. We're adding mercury, lead, arsenic, cadmium to the water along with it. What else can you say? It's ineffective and it's unsafe. The effects of fluoride itself, we know it has damages the nervous system and the brain at levels at least similar to those that we're exposed to today. We know that from studies from China, from studies going back to 1995, there was a laboratory rat studies and other studies ever since then. We know it affects the nervous system. We know that the most people who are most at risk are young bottle-fed infants. They get far too much fluoride if you're giving them fluoridated water or baby formula made up with fluoridated water, so don't ever do that. There are certain groups that are particularly at risk from too much fluoride. That includes people who drink a lot of water, like people who work outdoors in summer all day, people who play a lot of hard sports. I actually had a cyclist, a marathon type cyclist, who said to me he'll go through 8 litres of water in a cycle race. And his organisation, not the Ministry of Health, of course, but his organisation, has told them, do not ever fill up your water bottles with tap water, because all you do is sweat out the water and concentrate the poison that's in your tap water in your body. Make sure you use pure water when you fill up your bottles. Their race is like 8 hours long, endurance cycling. And the other people, of course, who are most prone to, particularly prone, are the very people that they say fluoride is supposed to help, the poor, and particularly Maori and Pacific people, because of the higher incidence of 1, diabetes, and 2, kidney problems. In fact, it's for that very reason that Dr. Andrew Young, black civil rights leader of the United States and former ambassador of the United Nations, just came out a month or two ago opposing fluoridation for that very reason, that black Americans and Hispanics are particularly susceptible to risk of being overdosed by this cumulative poisoning effect of fluoride for the same reason, kidney problems and diabetes, just as Maori and Pacific people here are in New Zealand.
I suppose that's not too bad a thing, if you're a eugenicist, of course.
Yeah, oh, brilliant if you're a eugenicist. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And quite frankly, you know, I think we do live in a very eugenicist country, New Zealand here. I mean, after all, we promote toxic vaccines to children in lower decile areas, i.e. black kids. And we make sure that anybody who winds up coming in the media or whatever is not a white man with a suit being taken away for corruption. It's some description of Maori being thrown in jail for a few years for a few ounces of pot. Or it's some Pacific Islander who the police are looking for, who's assaulted somebody. You know, those are the dangerous criminals. It can't possibly be the guys wearing the three-peat suits with collars and cuffs that are enslaved to criminal bankers that run the entire country and force all this poison on us, can it? No,
we give them bonuses.
Oh yeah. I mean, and don't they deserve it though? They've been working really hard. Notice how the credit that's due doesn't seem to get to the person who deserves it a lot of the time. You know, I mean, I think John Key deserves credit for what he's done as Prime Minister. You know, I reckon that he deserves a really nicely well knitted noose to hang him with. You know.
Yep, weave it out of dollar bills, man.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to have his head mounted on my wall, you know, like one of them moose heads that you have on your wall kind of thing. Yeah, it'd be great. You know, the John Key head there would be fantastic. We can put flowers in it or something.
Yeah, cool.
Or use it as a decorative birdcage.
Yeah. You know, upside down. I mean, the fucker had the what the, he was going to gold plate the first thaw nappy from the baby and use it as a hanging thing for putting plants in. That was one of his joking ideas for a business. Yeah.
Well, I suppose John Key isn't really the progenitor of much original thought. You know what I mean? It seems as though when it comes to our Prime Minister or any of our politicians for that matter, it doesn't matter how good they are, okay? And here's why. They're going into a system that specifically makes sure, and in fact, it's even written down in the rules, that you can't be good, okay? Because it violates the rules. All right, that's why they have all these parliamentary inquiries. Whenever something bad happens, what they do is they set up a parliamentary inquiry. So that way, if anybody wants to say anything bad about what the parliamentary inquiry is about, they instead have to say, we can only talk about that once the parliamentary inquiry is finished. And once it is finished, you realize that, hey, the parliamentary inquiry had set parameters, certain directions that they could only look in, and certain questions that I could not ask. And so by the end of it, after spending several million taxpayer dollars and refusing to answer any questions, we come up with a great 800-page document that tells us if all about anything. And we're so happy that we go and elect the next swizzle-stick son of a biatch as the Prime Minister. The frustration, I don't know what it is today about me, Mark, but I'm just really, really effed off today. You know, do you get days like that where you kind of don't need coffee in the morning because you're just so freaking angry?
Yeah, well, I only have to look at some of the stuff I've seen on YouTube lately with the police acting as private mercenaries for a power company in Kaikohe to make me feel that way. This is on-duty police officers acting as private mercenaries for a power company, assaulting a person trying to defend his property, beating with batons, using handcuffs as knuckle dusters. That's here in New Zealand a year ago. Yeah, and then as you were talking about before, put the guy in a psychiatric unit and fit him up with psychoactive drugs because they claimed he was crazy through their jacked-up psychiatrist. Yeah. That sort of stuff really pees me off, frankly. We're diverting from
fluoridation.
Yeah.
Well, thing is, it always does, don't you think? Because it's all tied in with it's just this one big overarching conspiracy, in my opinion, that hooks into absolutely everything. There's not a single industry, not a single country, and not a single dollar or medical bit of expertise that is exempt from this.
Absolutely
it gets into
right.
everything.
Yeah, absolutely
you know?
Right.
And that's the difficulty, is that people like yourself, for example, you specialise in fluoride whilst being aware of all the rest, whereas myself, I have no speciality per se. I just make sure that I bring all those people who do a wee platform to speak from, because no frickin' media in this country will do it, you know? I can't be bothered doing the research. Everybody else who can be bothered, they can't be bothered doing a radio show. So I give them the chance to talk about whatever the heck they want to talk about.
I hope you
appreciate it, Matt, because, it's a lot of work, and I think it's well worth it, because this frickin' country needs it, and it
absolutely
needs it now more than ever, because with Murdoch, this is an allegation that I heard this morning from Martin Bomber Bradbury, that Murdoch is going to buy out TVNZ and Radio 1. Which I can see happening, because if you wanted to point a stick at anybody who really benefits from buying up state media and then brainwashing the living Shiite Muslim out of all the people that are watching it, it's Rupert Murdoch. And, therefore, ladies and gentlemen, if you're living in New Zealand and you don't want all the media in this country at least to have no accountability and no ability to hear from people like Mark, please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com or guerrillamedia.co.nz and make a donation or subscribe for $5 a week, and we will send you out DVDs for packed full of information. You can copy them, and as a subscriber, I'll give you my personal phone number and my Skype, and you can call me whenever you like just to have a conversation. Usually do that It takes about an hour to have a conversation with me about anything simple. So, so you know, I can guarantee you, though, the money that you put in will not be worth it. And the only reason why you'd actually want to donate money to me and Guerrilla Media is because you understand just how valuable the information is and how much worth more it really has. Because you wouldn't just be supporting me, you'd be supporting everybody who winds up coming on the show through some form or another. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest has been Mark Atkin from the Fluoride Action Network in New Zealand. Mark, thank you so much for coming on with us today, mate. It's been a real pleasure. And we'll get the archives to you so you can promote it out to your email list as well.
Thanks, Vinnie, and you provide a great service, as you say.
Indeed. Kind of like a brothel. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with some more naughtiness. In fact, we have a presidential candidate coming up next who wants to give the people of the United States the right to an open ballot so that they can vote on what issues they want in a binding fashion. What a revolutionary thought that is, giving the people the option to have what they want. We'll be right back at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. It's hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of madness and chaos, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. Check us out at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, all our fabulous archives with previous people, particularly the Kiwi Collaborator section, where you'll be able to hear Kiwis and people that, you know, generally never get any frickin' media spotlight, talking about the most interesting issues of our time. Moving on, today, ladies and gentlemen, we have a wee panel discussion in the second hour. We have Seth Guillermo from, I believe, Florida is where he's living at the moment, and he's running for president. And the whole idea is about having open ballot elections so that people can vote on what they want, when they want, and whatever they vote on, it has to be done. Because, well, in the internet age, hey, basically all those middlemen and whatnot have become obsolete. The other person joining us in this panel discussion has been on the show before. His name's Dr. Bill Deagle. He has his own talk show on GCN Live. Dr. Bill Nicholas, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. I hope we can live up to your tagline, which is the lighter side of genocide. The facts combined with some good humor should kind of smack people up the side of the head to say, the reason why things are bad is because good people do nothing. And they do nothing because they're either quivering jellyfish and decide to be fearful, or they are just feel that it's best to do nothing because maybe we can prosper for a little longer if we don't shake the boat or cause any trouble. But what we need to do is we need to be the source of the trouble for the globalists and the corporate agencies of, you know, genocide, that really are not just concerned about getting all the money. They want all the power, and they want to have megadeth, too. This is not just a delusion. This is a fact. They're not preparing the earth for earth changes. They're not doing real government. In the day of Facebook and Twitter, we should be voting on every single issue should come up before the electorate. We should decide, not these stupid politicians who are being lobbied like prostitutes when they go back to the Beltway in Washington, D.C., or in the same with every government, whether it's in Kiwis in New Zealand or whether it's Aussies, Brits, or whatever. The problem is the people themselves should make the decision, and it should be relatively swift rather than by these stupid politicians that follow along party lines, party whips, and do things that are just plain evil.
Yeah, I would agree. I have experience in ballot access, and I've seen a lot of justice come about from people proposing direct initiatives. And one of the things that we're lacking is just the simple recall process. There's too many people saying we got to kick them all out, but they usually, you know, keep saying that right on through their midterm and wait till their terms expire to hopefully vote in for a new puppet candidate. And it's time people realize what the recall process is about and defile them so that we can kick them out as soon as possible and, you know, really just bring the argument to the ballot book when people get their voting guide as to why they should be kicked out. And the committees that do that will then get more of a following, and the program will naturally grow. People will get the picture, and we could have democracy work to save the constitutional republic system of government.
So we should send all of the politicians we elect a kind of a congratulations card with a picture of them with a sword of Damocles over their head and a boot firmly placed around their butt.
Yeah, it definitely
I suppose not. One of you might have your Skype notifications turned on, so when people text chat you, has a little whoop on. So you might want to try and turn those off. But look, with the elections coming up here, again, with my opinion weighing in here, it's all about open source, okay? And it's like Bill said, with the technology we've got now, nobody needs to be represented because they can just be there themselves, okay? They don't have to leave home. They don't even have to do a terribly large amount of research, and even if they were representative, they wouldn't do any research anyway. So basically, we can cut out a large amount of this cancerous entity that we call government and have people govern themselves. Now, something tells me that that would reduce the amount of cost immensely. Not only that, but it would also reduce the awful amount of bureaucracy and waiting around that everybody has to, you know?
Yeah, it'd be done very quickly. I think a lot can be done with what we have right now. For example, the recall process here in America doesn't involve every state. But if many of the politicians knew, we not only recall them, we can also do actions which isn't recall, but we can force them that they can't leave their constituency office. If they have to stay in whatever state they're in, that by itself will paralyze them from being able to lobby or being lobbied by so-called vested interests. Right? And also, if you can get rid of things like electronic voting machines, we have a receipt so you can verify. Maybe it has a barcode on it and verify that, in fact, you actually did get your vote. You'd have a certified number where you can go to a database and say, yeah, my vote actually was processed rather than being kind of shunted off or something else was put there. You can go back to a computer. So I believe that we should have a paper ballot with electronic backup with a code that will say, yes, my vote actually was counted.
Yeah, and I'm all about Segway. I just want to promote the concept of organizing with like-minded individuals, whether it be through Facebook, YouTube, or other groups. And hopefully if we did find a forum that was specific to this cause, we could use that. I've created a forum, but, you know, until we get like 100 people or so, we won't have that what they call the 100th monkey principle, where more people just join seeing that there's a little momentum. So I'd like to plug that, and, you know, if some listeners joined – plugged a news article, you know, if you just complained about government, that could be enough to get the ball rolling, because my forum is designed to organize people towards creating permanent ballot access for the recalls and the initiatives that could segue into having more of a direct democracy that would work. Research has shown that direct democracy wasn't just given to us by the Constitution, but the Constitution was designed to be a living document, and people fought for their rights to have direct democracy one state at a time. And the most impressive evidence of this happening that should really encourage people into getting involved was what was they called the Agrarian Revolt of North Dakota, where the farmers, back before phones and cell phones were around, you know, before the internet, with horse and buggy, organized 30% of the voters in the state of North Dakota to successfully lobby the politicians with an organization they later created, because they realized the pitchforks and torches weren't going to work, called the Nonpartisan League. And through lobbying for year after year, after many years of struggling, they got the politicians representing them to pass legislation that required it to be passed for 2 years in a row that opened up the rights for ballot access to create direct democracy. And they were so well organized that they were able to put seven initiatives on the ballot, one of which was the state bank initiative, which completely separated them from being in debt to the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, so they have the most thriving economy. One of the few reasons why they're one of the few states that's absolutely not going bankrupt.
Exactly. That's the reason why. And the interesting
it's that simple.
Thing is,
you wouldn't expect it. It's a bigger economy. It's going to be this or that. No. For example, here in California, there's no reason why the eighth largest economy on earth is going bankrupt. Even the investments for the, like I'm going to get Walter Burian on my show in the near future, and he talked about the comprehensive annual financial review. If we had a state bank in California and we didn't go to the Federal Reserve, we wouldn't have any debt here. We wouldn't be talking about cutting back programs or increasing college tuition or chopping away at the social safety net or Medicare or Medicaid, which has matching funds from the federal government. We also wouldn't be allowing money to be used by our state for illegal and aggressive wars for globalists or the transfer of technology to countries like China that oppress their own people with the worst oppressive regime in the history of Earth.
Well, you know, Well, of course, it's all praised by eugenicists, Rockefellers and Rothschilds and all the people that control the global banking interest anyway. You know, because obviously it seems pretty straightforward to me that the United States is becoming deindustrialized and they want to make it basically a post-feudal state with nothing but tertiary industry, you know. So it's only just service and they're not making anything, they're not creating any real wealth. And eventually all power and influence is going to be sucked out of the continental United States and just turn it into basically just a little slave economy run by elite bankers who can drive around completely immune from any of the laws that they make up out of the top of their head. You know,
yeah,
that's exactly what I see it as. Just this total psychopath paradise. And of course, there's going to be a few disasters to that. And government reacts to disasters in very similar ways all across the world by seizing control of all areas, all people's lives, and basically passing draconian legislation to maintain control of that disaster area essentially indefinitely.
Waterboarding the world is what you're talking about. They waterboard us, shove our head in the bucket, have us gasping for air, and then pull us up and say, now will you do what we want? And
yeah, it's like what Obama's doing right now with the Social Security threat.
Yeah, he's threatening that he's going
to
cut
the Social Security
payments. We should give him a T-shirt, maybe, Obama and all the globalists like his banker buddies, to say, if you believe in genocide, how about you first? So we'll say on this T-shirt, I believe in genocide. I'm going first.
Well, see, I think they should just be wearing a T-shirt that says "Keeping It Bankster" since 1913. We have a question in the chat room here for you, Dr. Deagle. This one from Rob Blotnicki. He says, Dr. Deagle, during a speech in 2008, I think at the Granada Forum, you were mentioning Richter scale level 15 or to 20 earthquakes in your prediction for the New Madrid fault line, or the Midas fault, so to speak. And seeing as things change the timeline on us a tiny bit, do you still see these massive earthquakes happening within the next year to year and a half?
I didn't give a timeline of when I expected them. I knew they were going to increase. You just look at the earthquake monitoring sites that you can go to the regular online. You can see they're increasing dramatically. Even in the last week, the level 7 earthquakes are along the Ring of Fire. The government did a major kind of a dry run war game massive war game about what's going on in terms of New Madrid. And the fact there's 25 major nuclear reactors within strike distance of the New Madrid fault. If they had a Fukushima level, which is like a 9.3 earthquake, all those reactors would go Fukushima. It is going to happen. It's a matter of when. The government knows it's going to happen. My guess is probably, to give you a broader kind of range, I think this decade we're going to have a major quake along the North San Andreas fault line in Northern California. There's already activity all the way down to the Baja California where the line extends, and we're going to have New Madrid go. They know that. The government knows it. And they actually are, rather than preparing the population, they're rather profit from it.
Yeah.
So well, I suppose. Oh, go ahead, Nick.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that is somewhat, you know, it's not totally non sequitur to be talking about nuclear problems right now, because that's just a policy created by these very same corrupt politicians that we need to organize ourselves for to recall them. That's exactly why we need to utilize direct democracy, because we can't count on the politicians passing the legislation we need to protect ourselves. Only the people at this point in time will be able to do that.
Yeah, exactly. That's why they go with their sharp engineering pencil and keep cutting corners. I'll give you an example. It's like building a roller coaster and deciding that you don't really need to put bolts on the cars. So if they go too fast, they're literally going to fly right off the roller coaster. That's what they did when they built with General Electric these TEPCO-type plants years ago. And then they know they only have so many years licensing. They found engineering problems within 1989 where they put the venting systems on the wet wells here in America. But instead, TEPCO did what's called a faux engineering system that they knew was going to fail. So it's like building and putting your gas tank on top of a volcano. It's like they're crazy. I mean, they knew eventually this was going to result in an engineering catastrophe. The same way when you built nuclear reactors on fault lines, or you just decide to re-engineer it so that you can say, oh, it passed the criteria, therefore it's safe. Just like they want to raise $21.5 million here in Southern California to allow the San Onofre reactor to continue because it's going to cost the public that much just to test to say, well, 4 years ago we discovered a fault line that's in a subduction fault zone just off of the California coast that can cause a tsunami that can overwhelm the San Onofre reactors. But, you know, we'll spend public money to do that, and then we'll just relicense them to continue this old reactor with old, unsafe systems that we know eventually are going to screw up. So their whole idea is they're not going to protect the public. They're going to spend our money to re-engineer something that won't work, and they know it's going to fail at some point in the future, and then they'll be there with their particular solution once they've killed enough people, destroyed enough health, and not developed alternative energy technologies that make it safe, like natural gas conversion of reactors, like wave energy, solar and wind. They're not going to do that. They're not going to develop easy to get access gas reserves and oil and clean coal-burning technologies like in North Dakota, the state you talked about that's very innovative. They want to suppress those because they want us dependent on the Middle East. They want us dependent on the globalists. They want us importing food, and they want to vaccinate, fluoridate, and toxically poison every cell of our body because they don't want us to be in the future. And they've, in a sense, remote viewed what the future is, and they're not there, and they're ticked off by that. So they want to engineer a new timeline where they're still the king rats in the new age.
Now, I agree with you 100%, but I agree to disagree about the technology that we could be using because I've done research, and there's a new movie out about fracking, which is the threat that
natural gas... Very, very bad stuff. Hydrofracking should be outlawed.
Yeah,
anybody doing it should go to prison immediately.
Yeah, but...
And we've got something like
Do not pass go. Do go to prison immediately. Do not let them back out again. If they hydrofrack land, and the rules they're doing are like 500 feet from a well and 2,000 feet from a major water supply, anybody doing hydrofracking in this country, anywhere in the world, they're nuts, and they're injecting chemicals and things that are just destroying the aquifers and the water supply. So hydrofracking is out. But there's lots of safe forms of energy that can be withdrawn temporarily. Remember now, at some point we're going to reach peak oxygen in this century, and we're only going to be allowed, literally with the carrying capacity there is to push out so many CO2 units and have it recycled and turned into oxygen. And yes, there may be some push in that, especially when we remove heavy metals, radioisotopes, and volatile chemicals that we're currently spewing all over the planet and destroying the oceans, because when the oceans die, there's no more ability to generate oxygen. 80% comes from the upper benthic layer of 10 meters or 30 feet. And so hydrofracking is out. Alternative energies in clean coal-burning technology and so on is usable. And most of the nuclear reactors that are out of date, it doesn't just say don't build new reactors. You got to decommission these properly, or it's actually more dangerous than what they're doing now.
Well, I was under the impression that clean coal is also quite dirty, but there's this technology that I found out about. It's very new, and it's somewhat experimental, but it's very feasible. There's a company here in Arizona that is working on this project to create what they call maglev wind, and it's about 3 football stadium size vertical axis wind turbine generator that collects
wind. Yeah, I saw that. That's an excellent technology. I agree.
Yeah.
One of those can replace about 800 of the conventional style, you know, 100 and some foot high turbine towers. And I agree, that is a very good technology, wave energy technology.
Black sunrise, black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, cause we don't know.
Well, I'm on board, Dr. Phil Siegel. Oh, always got to be running somewhere, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to my very special guest, Nicholas Guillermo, and Bill's had to run, but, you know, it's good to have him on for a wee segment. Anyway, now, you were launching a, you're wanting to get a citizens initiated reinvestigation of 9/11, weren't you, Nicholas? Tell the listeners about that.
Yeah, well, basically, I've been involved in the ballot initiative industry and following ballot initiative news online for the last 7 years or so, and I've been involved in politics for about 9 years. And so I found out about this like a couple days before he launched it, so I'm really glad to tell your listeners because it's brand new. It just launched on the 4th of July. And basically, Senator Mike Gravel, who was a presidential candidate in 2008, challenging Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton right on stage. If you saw the debates, he was awesome. He was like the angry white-haired guy, you know, yelling at them for lying at the debates. And it was so cool to see him stand up like that with his, you know, intensity about how they said that they didn't vote for war funding. And he called them out right there at the debates. It's so cool. I was immediately interested in him and immediately interested in his idea for a national initiative. But I had my own agenda. I was thinking the national initiative somewhat seemed speculative. We should be more focused on states' initiative rights and local initiative organization first and foremost. But it still had a good point, and he was bringing up the idea of ballot initiatives to the public. So he definitely did a lot of justice there. And he knows that if we put the ballot initiative on the ballot in several states or even just one state, calling for a constitutional amendment to be added to the state's constitution, that the state has to push forward in proceedings for a grand jury to organize with the power to subpoena for a new 9/11 investigation. It doesn't have to happen in New York State. It can happen in any state. So his strategy is to launch a ballot initiative in whichever state we find is going to be the most suitable, the easiest to get on the ballot. We're thinking either Massachusetts or Oregon right now, or Alaska. And we're actually looking forward to doing this in all states by 2012.
Why specifically Alaska, Massachusetts, or Oregon?
Only because the certain aspects to how those states have set the requirements for attaining ballot access that are easier than other states. We have a very limited amount of time, and we're obviously going to have limited funds because a lot of the big donors for 9/11 Truth have already kind of donated a lot in the past, and they certainly will donate more in the future, but we got to get more of a grassroots effort first. We're shooting to get 10,000 people behind the cause, and if everyone donates $1, $10, $20, we'll have enough money to actually qualify the initiative guaranteed in Massachusetts, Oregon, or Alaska because they have a lower signature requirement than the other states. California, you need 1 million signatures. In a state like Massachusetts, it's under 100,000. So Alaska is also.
So you're basically going for the place that has the bar set the lowest.
Yeah, Massachusetts is the best in my opinion, and I'm convincing Gravel to do that because my experience in ballot access, Massachusetts has what's called open access, where if you're a petitioner, you're carrying a recall or a ballot initiative, you can legally trespass, essentially. The cops will say you're trespassing on a public property like a supermarket, but the state has a constitutional amendment that gives petitioners the right to petition on public property, so they don't have to run around from parking lot getting chased by the cops like I've had the experience in Arizona or in Florida. In Massachusetts, you can stand in front of a supermarket all day and collect signatures easily and effortlessly. It's the same way in California, but again, Massachusetts has a lower signature requirement. Oregon just has a small population. And Alaska would really suck because I'll tell you what they do in Alaska and Arizona. Arizona, you know, is one of the hottest states in the summer, and Alaska is one of the coldest. So they made sure that they wanted to make it as hard as possible for people to have the right to ballot initiative by making the ballot initiative qualification time at the most extreme temperatures of the year. Arizona, it's got to be in the summer, and in Alaska, it's got to be in the frigid winter when it's pitch black outside. Can you believe it? That's what these politicians have done to limit our ballot access. But some serious activists like myself will be out there in the pitch black in Alaska or sweating in the heat in Arizona to get it done because we care enough about making sure people have our rights to vote on solutions.
Well, you know, I suppose it's if you forget that you've got any rights, you wind up losing them pretty quickly. In the general public, do you think that there is a recognition of that they actually have rights, or are they those kind of people who believe, like many government officials do, that rights are not given by God, but instead by government?
Oh, that's such a good question. Yeah, it's a loaded question. I'll answer it like this. Most people are in the illusion that they live in a democracy where they vote for a president and their vote counts, and they vote for a candidate and their vote counts. And they don't, and I'll explain why in a second. The only democracy that works is direct democracy, and it does work, and your vote can be counted when citizens, patriots, stand up and actually take those jobs as poll workers. The job of a poll worker is sitting there with the other poll workers, counting those votes and making sure that everyone comes to a consensus in the room before the numbers are counted, and every poll worker can actually verify that the counts have been counted correctly. You know, when voting for a candidate in the U.S., except for the state of Florida, there may be a couple other states. I'm not sure. I'm not necessarily an expert on this, but I do know quite a bit. In Florida, they have outlawed gerrymandering. And I worked on that campaign just last year when it passed. I was collecting signatures at all the college campuses and traveling all across Florida to get signatures to make it happen. We put it on the ballot, and voters overwhelmingly voted in majority to pass the amendment to end gerrymandering. And gerrymandering is literally when politicians redraw their voting lines, and instead of letting voters choose their politicians, the politicians choose their voters. So they're switching the tables on the voters and making voters think that their vote counts when they really don't. Because what the politicians do is they rig the election, literally, by making sure that the majority of the voters they need in their district far outnumber the people that would be opposed to them. Both parties are corrupt, but both parties would never focus on outlawing gerrymandering themselves, because as soon as they come into power, they use it to their advantage. If the Democrats were really anything democratic at all, they would have put an initiative to end gerrymandering on the ballot 100 years ago, but they didn't. Because they know that when they get in power, they use gerrymandering to screw the Republicans back. As simple as this, all they need to do to stay in power is to make sure that they have 70% of the voters in their district of their party. That way, every single person of the other party gets to the polls and tries to vote, thinking that their vote counts, but they can never get over 50%. That's pretty straightforward, isn't it? It makes a lot of sense.
Well, I think it would be pretty straightforward, which is precisely why the government wouldn't support it.
Yeah, and you know, the Electoral College, there's no law that says they have to absolutely vote on the popular vote. If there was, Gore would have been president back in 2000. The Electoral College votes for us. They're supposed to vote based on the popular vote, but there's no law that allows us to prosecute them when they don't. So it's a complete sham, and we just have to hope that something can work. And these guys, they have to be landowners to qualify for the Electoral College, and it's kind of corrupt in that sense that not anybody can even just do that.
I think with the government and whatnot, the real problem seems to be a lack of accountability, right? For example, in New Zealand, there is no requirement for politicians to disclose that they have conflicts of interest. There is no penalty if they don't disclose that they have conflicts of interest. There is no, there was nothing saying binding them to their word. Like, for example, there's no law against lying to the public and knowingly misrepresenting their policy. There is no law against it. In fact, there's like about 20 something. I believe that Penny Bright came out with a great list of all those illegal things that politicians are allowed to do, all those illegal and misleading things. And you know, it's shocking, but ultimately, totally unsurprising that the government has been operating specifically as a criminal entity and had the legal backup and muscle to do it for quite this long. So yeah. How
it
exactly
is extreme.
Do you I'm just going to pose a question for you. How exactly do you oppose a criminal extortionate ring of gangsters like this?
In the words
Without
of Malcolm
them just
X,
basically saying, look, we can just take it.
In the words of Malcolm X, he said, the ballot or the bullet. He didn't really want to condone violence. He wanted the black population to be stronger, close-knit communities, spend money at locally owned black businesses, for example, back in the civil rights era, you know. And you know, he was really about getting the black community aware of spending their money locally, not spending it globalist corporations owned by the, quote, white man. But he had a strong message that it doesn't matter what race you are. That really makes sense. It's the ballot or the bullet. He was saying, if we cannot seek justice in the legal means, then we must. Then the only way to seek justice is through violence. So people did distort his message and cast him to be like this person who's condoning violence and this and that, which I think is totally just warped. I think that really what he was saying was that we need to approach this from a civil point of view of utilizing the ballot. But again, you know, if the politicians, Kennedy said it well as well. He said it, those who stop, you know, a person's ability to have, you know, a civil revolution only create the opportunity for a violent one or something along those lines. It's a great quote. But yeah, I think
it was if you make peace. This was the quote.
Oh, yeah,
if you make peaceful revolution impossible, you make violent revolution inevitable.
Yes, exactly. And that was around that same time. Malcolm X said the ballot or the bullet. So I say let's get more people who take those stupid jobs of being a poll worker, okay? Do that so you can watch the votes yourself. That's a very patriotic thing to do. And organize in your community, for starters, and using the internet. It doesn't matter if it's worldwide. Like, I'm calling Australia from America. People will listen to this show anywhere, and people that know someone in Australia, know someone in France, know someone in Germany, who knows someone in America. In my opinion, is if we can stop corruption in America using the Constitution, because the doors are wide open for us to do it, then that could potentially end up saving America, which could lead towards saving the world in the long-term view. But it could happen very rapidly if the people just take back our country and reinvigorate the Bill of Rights and our rights to use the ballot and create justice ourselves. Otherwise, again, we're just being passive. We're waiting for the politicians to either fix everything or we're watching the world crumble before our eyes, and both of those are not solutions. So we have to be active, and the ballot is the only way citizens can become lawmakers. So it's about ballot access, using recalls, nominations, and in some states that don't have it, it would require a serious lobbying effort. Even though lobbying is speculative, if enough people rise up, it can be effective. So, yeah, people just need to be more involved. And my website, Activism Truth, explains how to do that. And I hope that some of your listeners will join my forum so that we can begin building momentum on it to show that other viewers that view it in the future when I promote it will see that there is some interest here and that it's worthwhile to be involved with it. I am going to begin documenting the door-to-door fundraising and organizing activities. I had about 3 years' experience in training people how to do this and doing it myself. So I'm going to begin documenting that, and as soon as that happens, there will be more momentum because the skills that I expose and the way that I train people is going to be exposed through YouTube videos and through Skype meetings, and I will be an asset for every patriotic-minded person, no matter what country you're living in, to learn how to successfully organize people in your community and engage them in conversations and get them behind causes that benefit your community directly so that we can begin to organize for the permanent ballot access we're going to need to take out these corrupt politicians and put them in jail where they belong.
Well, and we talk about how to replace the politicians, and in my opinion, it's all just basically the middleman type thing. I watched the news last night, Nick, and I'm sure you'll be able to relate to this. Three stories in a row. There were people asking the government for something and then having to wait a long time in order to receive it. Okay? Three stories in a row. Exact same thing. Something snapped in me, and I was just like, wait a second. Hold on a second. That's what everybody goes through. Whenever you want anything out of the government, you have to sit around waiting around for ages. Whenever you want something out of yourself, you get up and you frickin' do it. Cut out the frickin' middleman.
Exactly.
You know, this is what it is. It's accountability and responsibility, okay? If you don't have the ability to be an accountant, stop stealing everybody's money as a representative of government. I should think that was pretty straightforward. And if you don't have the ability to frickin' respond in time, you void your frickin' responsibilities as a representative. Because a representative is supposed to represent you. That's what the word means. That's
I want to do it. I want to personally be the proponent or work with the proponent for initiative to basically seize all the politicians' assets, all their savings, all their inheritance, and give it right back to the people. Because if they didn't improve their economy or come up with some brilliant idea like Nikola Tesla or Einstein, you know, or do something amazing like philanthropic for the world, they have no use taking our tax money ever again. And I think a lot of voters would vote majority for that. So, you know, what the idea is, when we create permanent ballot access, the sky's the limit. We can propose all the important initiatives, find consensus among our supporters, and then launch those initiatives among having full consensus from the supporters in the cause.
Yeah.
It's all possible.
Well, you know, alternative media really needs to take the bull by the horns here, because if we think about the elections, what have we got here? In America, we've basically got Ron Paul, Ralph Nader, Cynthia McKinney, and yourself will be the only presidential candidates that seem to be talking about something.
I'm not actually running for president, my friend. Oh, that's such a great...
Oh, you're not yet?
No, thank you, though. That's wonderful. I'm just an independent activist promoting permanent ballot access, and I really am interested in building it as a cooperative, collective company. I filed a LLC, so it's all legal. I can take donations, and we can spend it. But I think the people that take a role in building my company will be on the board of directors, and will actually be a cooperative. I have no interest in being a top-down model. And but Mike Gravel was a presidential candidate. That's probably why you got it confused. And what I want to explain is that I'm working with him on promoting the 9/11 Citizens Commission independent initiative at 911cc.org.
And we'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Join us in the chat room. Back in a moment.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab, and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa.
Oh, yeah. This is Tyranny's theme song. It really is everywhere. And I don't know about you, ladies and gentlemen, but this morning, I don't know, some big pharma medication drugging with a needle in the back of my skull kind of cap places needs to be undergoing. I'm going to speak in gibberish because I'm so freaking pissed off this morning. I hate many, many things in this world, ladies and gentlemen, and the thing that I hate most of all is delays. And if you want to point a finger at an institution that causes the most amount of delays, it always, always goes to the government, or to the lesser extent, the DMV. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Nicholas Guillermo, and we're going to be talking about another thing that really is one of my pet hates, false flag terrorism. And the fact that they never get frickin' investigated properly, except with a whitewashed frickin' panel full of scumbag globalist pieces of Shiite Muslim. They get paid copious quantities of amounts of money and Tavistock Institute training to lie to everybody so that they believe it. But it's unfortunate at the best of times. But conveniently, we do have good people out there that occasionally try to organize truth to be said to people. Nicholas, welcome back.
Hey, thanks a lot. Yeah, the main reason why I had to call in is because this 911cc.org cause is so legitimate. It's the strongest idea that I've ever seen to address this 9/11 issue. 9/11, you know, after it happened, New Yorkers organized for NYC Can. And they proposed a ballot initiative. The judge threw it out for various reasons, but they weren't really organized for permanent ballot access. I did hear that they were going to try to do it again. But what they need to do is really get people's emails, get phone numbers, and get them interested. You know, create like a radio show around it, or, you know, have some other means of keeping people behind it. Because as soon as that initiative fails, what they should have done, if I were running the thing, I would have immediately filed a recall for the judge that threw it out of office, and then, you know, put in the voter guide why we were recalling the judge, because he denied the rightful investigation of the towers, you know, proposed by ballot initiative that should have been the new law of New York City. But yeah, you know, that's what permanent ballot access will do. It'll allow people to put initiatives on the ballot, and they will pass. They have like the State Bank of North Dakota, medical marijuana. We've stopped gerrymandering. There's been small victories here and there across the country. But there needs to be some more revolutionary initiatives, and this 9/11 ballot initiative is by far the most revolutionary because it really is the catalyst to bring together people from the left and the right, to wake them up about the puppet masters and false flag terrorism, and to get them out of this daze that they're in, and, you know, begin to open the doors of their mind to understand greater things like freedom and liberty and what, you know, America is really supposed to be all about, and how it's being taken away from us by these globalist masters. So every listener that's on the show, please go to the website 911cc.org and check out what Gravel has to say. Look at some of the people affiliated with him, like Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and the True Patriots, and others. Cynthia McKinney is endorsing it. We're about to put her profile up on the site. And, yeah, you know, you can donate a few bucks because that's definitely what we need, but we also need people to help us with the outreach and volunteers. And if you'd like to network with me in finding out great ways of volunteering your time, whether it's just a few hours a week or whatever you can do to get the word out there about this initiative, it would really be all the much better, because I alone and Mike Gravel's small team is not necessarily going to be able to handle the job all ourselves. We rely on you guys, the people who are affected by the 9/11 aftermath, to being the strength in our numbers that will topple the corruption of the New World Order once we have an investigation. And this is so crucial. You got to be competent at staying involved, and that just is a matter of really just taking the initiative yourself to, you know, be involved with a new cause that's really going to bring together all the other causes you've been involved in the past, and allow us to have victory. You can join my website's forum and also stay in contact. It's a lot better than Facebook, and you know, you can link with me on Facebook. I have a YouTube channel and whatnot, but ActivismTruth.com really lays it out in simple to understand terms, and is a great website you can pass on to others. I'm promoting the 9/11 investigation there, and it's just crucial that we have an investigation by 2012. But we got to do it sooner than later, and that's the soonest next. That's the next election cycle we can make it happen. If we get 10,000 people to donate 10 bucks each, we'll be able to get the initiative on the ballot in multiple states, because that will get the ball rolling. We'll definitely qualify for at least one state, and we'll be able to get the momentum to begin the process in other states as well. So we would like to see you at the top with the other activists making things happen.
Yeah, I suppose that's one of the things that people need to understand about the whole human experience, particularly as it pertains to politics, right? And this is what I mean. If you want to change something big, it is basically impossible to do it all alone. Okay, you can do big things by yourself, but to get massive change happening everywhere, there have to be people who share your vision, who help you and support you and put you out there along with the other people. And if you want to help out Nicholas with his goal here, and I know that there's plenty of patriots and truthers that I've had on the show that are regular listeners as well. So if you want to give him a hand, please do go to 911cc.org. That's 911cc.org. And I just wanted to segue a little bit here. I'm not sure if this is a something that will come in, but this is from the Vancouver Sun. A British phone hacking whistleblower found dead. Former News of the World journalist Sean Hoare, interesting, is seen in the undated handout picture released on July 18th, 2011. And he's one of the sources for the early newspaper stories of the News of the World phone hacking scandal. And British media said that he was found dead at his home on Monday, but police did not believe that the death was suspicious. Okay, great. So let me get this straight. A massive freaking corporation held accountable for dastardly deeds goes under at the hands of one of the most evil globalists in the world, and then the guy who exposed that whole thing turns up dead, and supposedly there's nothing suspicious? Are you effing retarded? Seriously. This is retarded. Okay, that's all there is to say.
Well, mind you, yeah, that sucks for the whistleblower, but mind you, we ourselves don't need to be afraid of this by being activists. Together we're strong. If we do this solo, we're not that tough. You know, if I do this solo, it's not necessarily going to work. If Mike Gravel does his cause solo, it, you know, we won't really get anywhere. But when we're all together, you know, they can't come out and try to, you know, knock off individuals who are speaking truth in their communities and waking up their neighbors. So, and they realize that. That's why the revolution has got so far. That's why people like Ron Paul are actually, you know, running for president and, you know, probably going to win, because really, when I look at Ron Paul's election too, I think this is a nice little thing to bring up, because you got so many other Republicans running against him, but there's so many Republicans that left the Republican Party or were against the war and for Ron Paul that they're kind of becoming spoiler votes unto themselves. I think Ron Paul's got a really good chance of winning this time, and I hope people join the money bomb coming up here. When is it, on the 17th? I have a notification coming up. But I hope people can drop him a few bucks, you know, and just say that you you participated in – wanted to be part of the change in the world. And, you know, we can really get somewhere. But, yeah, this whistleblower got knocked off. It sucks. We already know there's the air is unfit to breathe and the water is unfit to drink and the food's poisonous, right? So let's do something about it. Permanent ballot access is a solution that works. History has proven that. It's not speculative. I don't want to hear anybody saying I'm not going to join, I don't think it's going to work, because you haven't done the research to see the history of ballot access. If you want to have more information in front of your eyes to read in probably in the next year, go to ballotpedia.org. You know, I don't think anybody's got enough free time to actually read through everything that's on that site, but it's a historical chronologue of ballot initiatives since the beginning of the ballot initiative process. And you can see that there's evidence right there of every single ballot initiative that has passed and failed. And mind you, the only reason why they failed is because enough voters maybe didn't vote for it. There's media propaganda. But if we organize for permanent ballot access and we can put those initiatives on the ballot effortlessly every year, then we will be successful. We'll wake up people just by putting it on the ballot in the first place. They'll get to read about it in their book and do their own research. So there's nothing to lose by being a part of this new type of activism. It's not like phone banking. All that stuff is speculative. You can call your corrupt politicians all you want. They're not going to change from being corrupt. But if you kick them out of office, then you got your foot, you know, you're walking in the right direction. If you're working on putting initiatives on the ballot to directly solve the problems by creating new constitutional law that will address them, we're moving in the right direction. So we got to be aware that this is the changing of the ages. And it's time people have more consciousness. It's time people become empowered through the ballot initiative process.
Indeedy do. And if you are a whistleblower, just give us an email, producer@thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, and we'll allow you to come on the air and go. So it'll be fantastic. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Yeah, maybe you could put a vocoder on it too, and so no one will know who they are.
All right, there we go. Whistleblowers on thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Thank you very much, Nicholas. And you have yourself a fabulous time. And any more support I can be to you, you just let me know when you want to come on the show if you've got new developments. All right. Thank you very much for listening in, ladies and gentlemen. You're freaking fabulous. 911cc.org.